At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show on CBS Audio Network. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang of Gatestone, Newsweek, and The Hill, joins me to comment on his new article just published from Newsweek about the Mexican border with the United States and China's presence. We're also joined by Professor Evan Ellis, Professor of Latin American Studies at the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. But first, Gordon, a very provocative piece you published in Newsweek. How is it that China sees the Mexican border crisis as an advantage? Good evening, Gordon.
Good evening, John. Well, China is deeply involved in Mexico, as it is in other Latin American states. And what we're seeing in Mexico, among other things, are the Chinese money laundering gangs taking over. They're working not only for the Sinaloa cartel, but other ones as well. They're using burner phones and Chinese banking apps, and they're moving large amounts of money through New York, through the New York banks. And this really is a problem on a number of different fronts.
Gordon, this is official Chinese activity. This is sanctioned by Beijing, or are these criminal gangs out of China? Do we know?
Both. They are criminal gangs, and they are Chinese ethnically, but they are out of China. And also because China runs a near-total surveillance state, because it tightly controls the banking system, nobody can launder money through China, which is what these gangs are doing, without Beijing's knowledge. So Beijing is either actively supporting this or it's letting it occur, but they have to know what's going on. You can't run a totalitarian state and say, I didn't know that this was happening. They know what's happening, John.
China is also deeply involved in Latin America because of the crisis of the virus. And Professor Ellis, your comments about these recent revelations that China, I'm looking at the McClatchy Bureau reporting here, that China is using its vaccine as a diplomatic card to make certain that certain countries follow Huawei and other technology that is questionable from the point of view of security. Where are they using it, Evan, and how does it work? They come with a vaccine in one hand and what's in the other hand? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Good to be on the show. The major example, of course, is China's engagement with Brazil, where, unfortunately, Jair Bolsonaro's government has had some significant difficulties in getting COVID-19 under control, but due to also difficulties in procuring significant amounts of other vaccine, there was an interest during a recent trip over to China to try to get more of the Chinese, the Sinovac vaccine. And reportedly, the offer that the Chinese made was, we're willing to work with you on this if you are willing to make sure that Huawei continues to be an option when Brazil does its 5G rollout. But the challenge is that although not having the greatest efficacy, the three Chinese vaccines, CanSino, Sinopharm, and Sinovac, actually have been able to significantly increase their production quantities, which means that in places from Chile to Peru to Argentina and elsewhere, there is not enough other vaccines, this gives China an important lever in advancing its commercial positions.
When you say the Chinese vaccines don't have efficacy, do you mean in comparison to the vaccines that are well known in the U.S., Pfizer's, Moderna's, AstraZeneca? Is that the comparison, Evan?
Exactly. While the generally the efficacy figures for the Western vaccines that you cited are in the 90s, for example, CanSino vaccine is testing about 66% efficacy, Sinopharm about 79%, Sinovac around 50% efficacy. So while it's marginally acceptable, it's really not at the level because the Chinese really never prioritize the type of genetic sequencing technologies that have really come out with the highly effective Western vaccines.
Gordon, you have a question for the professor.
Evan, China has not released its phase 3 trial data. So not only may these vaccines have low efficacy rates, they may not even be safe. And I guess what this points to is that countries in Latin America are just desperate for vaccines. Is that the case?
Absolutely. And I think you see this across the entirety of the Chinese COVID response. So, for example, Peru ran into a series of troubles where it spent a lot of money procuring a Chinese COVID test early on, which ended up having a very high false negative rate that many people feel actually contributed to the rapid spread of the virus in Peru. And so, yeah, the same type of thing, indeed, phase three trials. There actually was a case in Peru where the Chinese vaccine actually was written in a way that escaped from legal liability if things had gone wrong in those phase three trials. And there have been similar problems in Brazil. And really, this mirrors problems in other areas in terms of misfunctioning ventilators and other defects. And so it mirrors some of the concerns with China overall, and I think we see certainly in this area as well.
So this is virus diplomacy, and it's a follow-on from how China used the PPE, the masks, the gowns, the gloves, all the material that was in desperate supply in the early part of the surge. They've just extended it into the vaccines. It seems blatantly cynical. Do these countries object? Do they see that what they're getting here is a pig in a poke?
Well, I think there's a combination of desperation as well as gratitude and need. I differentiate the early phases, the masks and things like that, which have a decreasing amount of leverage now. But the thing that really worries me about the vaccine is that, especially thanks to some of the mismanagement of vaccine purchases and lack of prioritization, the need for vaccine will extend throughout 2021 and 2022 in many Latin American countries as they make critical decisions about infrastructure to overcome the economic difficulties created by COVID. And so just at the moment when they most need vaccines and they most need jobs, China is there to say, hey, if you sign with us on the dotted line for our infrastructure projects and our loans, we'll work with you win-win on the vaccines as well.
Gordon, do you find this any more likely than the Belt and Road gambit when they said they were going to loan billions to countries like Nicaragua? The money didn't show up, neither did the Belt and Road. Is this another gambit that China will try and people will take advantage of and then ignore them?
Well, this certainly is a gambit, but I think the one thing here, though, is that this will be an effective gambit, unlike Belt and Road. You know, Belt and Road projects, many of them were not economic, which is the reason why the private sector didn't build them. But people do need vaccines, and they do need personal protective equipment, and that's what makes vaccine diplomacy, as Evan says, so effective.
You have a question for Evan, Gordon.
Evan, if Brazil, for instance, chooses Huawei for its 5G backbone, what does that do with our relations with that country?
Specifically, it makes it very difficult for us to share with Brazil certain types of intelligence data, particularly in the security domain, if we are worried that there are untrusted vendors like Huawei in the 5G network. I mean, in the 2017 security laws, as you know well in China, Huawei is obliged to turn over data if the Chinese government does so asks. And so, if it has access to that data, and it's the same case in other countries going forward with Huawei in their systems, even with commercial providers, including Panama and including El Salvador and others. It makes it very difficult for us to share sensitive data, which is critical for those nations to combat organized crime and to cooperate with us in other ways. So ultimately, it undercuts them. It's not that we don't want to cooperate with these governments, but, we can't put sensitive sources and methods and U.S. national security data at risk because of what these governments decide. And frankly, it's not good for them as well, because you have sensitive personal data of government ministers, you have sensitive commercial data from the private sector, and the decisions about procurement, which really begins to take away those governments' ability to make their own best sovereign decisions about how they realize the value added from the investment of their people's money.
Professor, we have less than a minute. Southcom is aware of this virus diplomacy. Do they have a policy to answer it 30 seconds.
Admiral Fowler, the head of Southcom, did call this out in his congressional testimony. Of course, Southcom engages on the military side and has publicly communicated our concerns with respect to what we can do in terms of our security diplomacy. But at the end of the day, this is a political and policy issue for those governments. And I think Secretary Blinken and others with President Biden's team are also taking that message forward as well.
So this is a handoff to the State Department, and they're well informed and can answer with, I mean, we have better vaccine. When and if we release it to the world, we have a superior vaccine. Will that work? Evan, we have 30 seconds more. Go ahead.
We have the superior vaccines, but we don't necessarily have the superior distribution capability, nor necessarily the leverage. And so, like many other products, where the U.S. was often best in the world, but our competitors had the leverage. Unfortunately, the best product doesn't always win without a concerted plan by the government to support it.
Professor Evan Ellis, Latin American Studies, U.S. Army War College, Strategic Studies Institute, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.